Welcome to this Foot Femme Reflect podcast. A bit different today. I did originally do this interview on Zoom, and then I figured everyone is so sick of staring at screens all the time at the moment. Why not do a podcast? That way you can just listen to it. I have such an exciting interview today, which is with Chris Lockwood, Jill Sale, and Leah Caleb, and they played in the 1971 Women's World Cup in Mexico. Which I would just like to point out quickly is still unrecognised by the FA. I met Chris, Jill and Leah about a year and a half ago now at the University of Sheffield, and I was doing a project on women's football, and they came to talk about the undiscovered Women's World Cup. We've been in touch since then, and they have been so, so helpful with my project. They've put me in touch with loads of people, so thank you all for that. I'm just like really keen to share their stories. I think that we do not know enough at all about the history of women's football in this country, and it's time to learn about it. I've split these interviews into like three separate ones. So the one today is going to be about their experiences playing football growing up as girls and women. The second one's going to be about the World Cup experience, so the 71 World Cup in Mexico. And then the third one's going to be about what's happened since then for them and in general for women's football. Really hope you enjoy this interview. It is really interesting. I know that's my opinion, but I'm like really believe it. And there will be another one very soon.
Hi.
How did you get into football, Leah?
Okay, I at my infant school. It was a very small infant school, and in the playground, all the boys played football. We found that as there was no space really apart from just, you know, perhaps do skipping. But anyway, the boys played football, and in the end, lots of the girls just joined in. Mm-hmm. So it was pure luck, really, that I started playing. And I would have only been, I don't know, five or six. Mm-hmm. So I played along with the boys, but I found I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I continued to play. And it took me through into my junior school. And then I'd go to the park with the boys and play football. And there might have been one other girl that did. And it progressed from there. And then it became a real passion and a love. And I was no different to a little boy playing in the park. I loved just kicking a ball.
So it wasn't like you didn't have someone in your family that was, you know, that wanted you to play, or brothers or sisters?
No, it was in some respects, I love sport anyway. Mm-hmm. So it just happened, I suppose, to be the one that started me off, and I just found I thoroughly enjoyed it. Just that feeling of having a football at your foot, you just can't lose it.
And what about in, for example, school? I mean, you know, I'm doing my master's now in PE more specifically. Like, did you ever play football in PE?
No, you only played in the playground at break time. Uh-huh. My headmaster, we had a headmaster who came over from Gibraltar, actually, and he was obviously quite forward thinking. He asked if I could actually play, this was in the junior school in the boys team, with the local authority, but unfortunately, girls just weren't allowed to play. Mm-hmm. So that was shelved, and so I just continued into my teenage years playing football with the boys in the park.
Jill, what about you? Was your story similar?
I've got four brothers, and so I was a bit of a tomboy anyway. Mm-hmm. So we had a big green outside our house where we all just congregate, and my brother's friends used to come around and say, is Jill coming out to play football? I didn't want my brothers, they just wanted me to come out. And so yeah, that was a, you know, didn't go down too well with my brothers. But So yeah, and everybody, you know, all the lads around didn't have a problem with me playing, you know, that, as I say, they wanted me to play. Uh-huh. And as for school, no, as with Leah said, we weren't allowed to play in school at all. I was the only girl that I knew of that time that played football anyway in my area. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any other girls. So while they were doing gymnastics in the gym, one of my PE teachers said I could go out in the playground and just kick the ball around. But we went, and so that's what I did. I was just kicking it around on my own, you know. Yeah, just having to doing keepy uppies and kicking it against the wall and things like that. That was my PE lesson because she knew I wasn't interested in the gymnastics and things. So, but I, you know, I loved all sports, but football was the best, you know, the one I really wanted to do. When I was about 9 or 10, I think, I played for a local lads team called the Cougars. It was a lad from school. His dad was running the team and asked if I would play. So I did. And they called me Billy because I looked like a little boy, I think, anyway, because I had short hair and, you know, I was just roughing around with the little lads and that. So, yeah, they used to call me Billy. And that's how I was allowed to play. Yeah, because they didn't know I was a girl. But when they did find out I was a girl, they didn't want me to play. So, yeah, so I was about 10. And then, and I was only little anyway. I mean, I haven't grown much since then, but I was only 4 but nothing anyway. But so then, and from there, when I was 12, I joined a women's team that my sister-in-law knew of a place called Tame where she lived, mm-hmm. Had a women's team. Mm-hmm. And so I started there in the reserves. Mm-hmm. And that's, basically how I played. But, you know, and if it wasn't for my parents, you know, I wouldn't have been able to play really.
Yeah, I was going to ask actually, like, I mean, parents have to be supportive of you, don't they? If you want to play football, even now for me, like, your parents have to go out of the way to support you to play football because it's not sort of the normal thing to do for a girl. But I imagine for you all, like, that was even more important.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if you didn't have that, I mean, you know, we didn't have money, you know. Fortunately my dad had a car and that and could get me to and from training and things like that and run me around and mm-hmm. and stuff. But yeah, without their support, you know, I wouldn't have been able to play the game the way I did.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very important.
Definitely.
And I think Leah and Chris are the same.
Okay, so you actually had to pretend to be a boy to play football when you were younger.
Yeah, the boys, yeah, because there were no girls' teams. So, yeah, I just had to put the kit on and I was a boy. I mean, I didn't mind because I was a tomboy anyway. So I just wanted to fit in with the lads anyway to play. Yeah, and they all knew Billy. Yeah. And my dad still calls me that now.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he still called me Billy. Yeah, he even bought me I've got it in my cabinet, a little Ladro of Sport Billy. It's a little girl footballer, you know, holding a football, and it's called Sport Billy. And my dad was searching for ages to get one, and he managed to get one. Got my nephew to get it from America for me as a surprise. So, and that was only a couple of years ago he got that for me. So. Yeah, so all these years I'm Billy. Yeah.
How about you, Chris? How did you get into football then at the start?
Well, all my cousins were boys, so I had two sisters. Uh-huh. They weren't into sport at all, but my cousins were boys, and I was brought up on a farm at first, and we used to play football around the farmyard. Mm-hmm. My uncles, my cousins, everything. And then my dad had to move for work purposes down to the south. Mm-hmm. And I straight away just started playing football with the boys. And we had a little club called the Binny Club.
Binny?
Which was like the Binny Club, yeah. And we all used to meet in this guy's little boy's shed and then we'd start a football team. And I mean, they didn't care who I was. I was just a footballer. And yeah, being a boy or a girl didn't come into it. And I, like Leah and, well, Jill, I didn't know of any other girl that played football or was interested. Mm-hmm. And it was the only sport I did actually like.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when I was at infants and junior school, I was allowed to just carry on doing it. But as soon as I got to senior school, no, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And if I was warned not to kick the ball, and of course, you know what it's like.
When it
comes along, you kick the ball, and I used to get sent off. So I rarely did games, really, because they used to send me back to the dressing room. So I didn't really get any support at all at senior school. Mm-hmm. It was like I was some kind of strange person because I wanted to play. Uh-huh. And but actually, at senior school, a girl came up to me and said, oh, they're starting a girls' team. And she gave me an address, and off I went along. And I joined it, and they were very eager, but they didn't have any football skills, so they weren't very good. So they stuck me in goal. And we joined a league. And then luckily for me, anyway, Harry Batt found out about me, and I joined Chilton Valley. Uh-huh. And that's how I met Leah. And we've been friends since
we
were little. Yeah.
So you started off playing in goal there?
I did, yes.
That's where it all started.
Yeah, that's where it all... Well, see, I could play anywhere because of the fact that the boy, you know, we had a crowd of boys. Uh-huh. And when we used to meet at the sports field, uh-huh. The two best players used to be captain. Mm-hmm. And quite often, I was one of them. So we chose until you got down to the one nobody wanted. That's how we chose the teams, which was
they don't do and, that nowadays.
No, you couldn't do it now, no. And you know, but that's how it was. It was like survival of the best. You wanted to be the captain to choose a team, and that's how it was. Uh-huh. And yeah, so we all took turns in playing everywhere. So really, I don't know if it was to my detriment, really. I didn't have a specific position at first. So I could play anywhere, so I could get put anywhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at first I was goalkeeper, but I couldn't wait to get out because I absolutely hated goalkeeper. I really hated it. Although I could do it,
uh-huh.
and I wasn't bad, I just didn't like it. The pressure is just,
yeah. You know,
you can make up for it on the field, uh-huh. I find. If you know, if you make a mistake, you can make up for it. In a goal, when you're a goalkeeper, you can't. And then I didn't like that.
So I think in all of your cases to start playing football, like you were surrounded by boys. It's not like you had girls' teams around to go and join. It's not like school supported you playing football. You just kind of fell into it. Into
definitely, yeah. No, weren't allowed at school at all. No,
we had no role models because women weren't in magazines or newspapers. There was no mention of women playing football. So all our idols were the men players because
mm-hmm.
they're all we knew.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's how it was.
I think like now, obviously, you know, things are way better than then. And in terms of role models, there's more sort of media coverage of women in football. Still proportionately nothing compared to the men's. Like I was reading a study recently and it said that this was a few years ago now, but they've done like an annual review of the newspaper and the coverage of men's sports and women's sports, and women's got like something like 3% of the coverage that men's got, something like that. I can't exactly remember, but it was a ridiculous statistic. So it's kind of like improving slowly. But even in terms of schools, in my case in PE, we never got to play football ever. That still hasn't changed since I went to school. I think in some schools it's still the same. Girls don't get the chance to play football. When was it that you all first found out about women's football? You found a women's team. What were your experiences? Jill, do you want to go first?
To find a women's team to start with was amazing because, as I say, I didn't know of anybody. Amazingly, they had two teams where I went in Tame, and it was only a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these two teams. So there was the first team and a reserve side.
Mm-hmm.
So being the age I was and just starting in women's football, I joined in with the reserve side, Tame Wanderers. Mm-hmm. But the girls in the first team used to travel from quite a few areas, Oxford and all the Lyon areas around, surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it because it was a proper game, although, you know, we used to just play on the park pitches and things like that. But it was organised. There was a league. Mm-hmm. You know, we had pretty basic changing facilities, you know, in the scout hut, and we had to walk along, go to the scout hut, get changed, then walk along the road down to the football pitch because it wasn't next to it. And, you know, it was only sort of volunteers used to put the nets up if we had nets. Sometimes we didn't have nets. And the pitches were usually really just muddy, but it was a game, you know, and you felt part of a team and it was great. And, you know, after the first season, you know, we had a little do at the end of it, a little social mm-hmm. thing, and you had prize giving and things like that. And then I progressed up into the first team the following season. So I think I was the youngest one in the first teams. Mm-hmm. But from there, I've made lifelong friends, you yeah. know, over 50 years. It's funny because so I was 12 when I started there, and my friend Ali, who Leah and Chris know, she retired the other day. She's 65. So we live, you know, 2 minute walk from each other now, and she's from Oxford. And if I hadn't have joined that team, our paths would have never crossed. Uh-huh. Same with Leah and Chris, our paths yeah. would have never crossed without football. Uh-huh. So yeah. it's not just the actual playing the game, which we all love, and that was the main thing, but socially, and you make friends, and, you know, yeah. and travel around, and it was just great camaraderie, really, and just playing was just brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Couldn't wait for Sunday to come, because that's when we played on a Sunday. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was great.
Was it hard to find other teams to play against?
Yeah, it was, to say, fortunately, because obviously these teams have been going before I knew there were any women's teams where I came from, and they were organised leagues. we were like the home county, so the southern area uh-huh. We were in. So I don't know, I can't remember how many teams were in the league, probably about six maybe mm-hmm. in the league, I'm not sure. And then cup games. So we always had a game. So, but you had to travel. It was, you know, we had to go to Devizes in Wiltshire and yes. Southampton area, you know, so it was all southern. So that, you know, you didn't have local games, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, long distance.
Yeah. So, yeah. So fortunately, we had to, you know, had transport to travel. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I was surprised at how many women were playing then. Because I just didn't think there were any.
Yeah.
So that was great.
How about you, Leah? What was it like when you found your first women's football team?
It was through my mother, actually, at work. A lady said to my mum that there was a ladies' football team. And that was Chilton Valley, which was Harry Batt. So Chilton Valley was my first club. Mm-hmm. And it was literally the other side of the town. So it was a couple of bus journeys to get there.
Wow.
And I joined at 11, probably just coming into the age of 12, 11, 12. And I joined Chilton Valley. So they had only that team. Mm-hmm. So you had, from that age, 11 upwards, you know, into the teens and early 20s. Mm-hmm. So that was my first experience, and it was Chilton Valley were already quite a successful team, and they played in a league. I think it was sort of close to Midlands, or I can't remember, I'll have to check what the league was called, but we played in a league, and so it was very competitive, and we played some teams, actually some teams further south and going up towards Northampton. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it actually was my mum that found the team. She obviously was quite it was obvious I wanted to play football. I wasn't going to stop playing football. And so I was given great support from mum and dad. Uh-huh.
And how about you, Chris?
Well, once I'd been found by Harry and got to Chiltern Valley, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe the standard of the women that were playing. I mean, a lot of them were as good as the boys I was playing with, and some were, and a lot of the women were even better. So, it was a revelation to me, really. And then never looked back after that. And one of the first games when I was playing, I was in goal still at the time. I was really shy sitting there, didn't know anybody. And this little girl come up with the ball and said, "Do you want to kick about?" And I went, "Yeah, all right." And that was Leah. And yeah, and that was the start of, yeah. She couldn't get rid of me after that. So
a long friendship.
It's the best thing that ever happened. I mean, yeah, we did play on some really bad pitches because women weren't allowed to play in any stadiums, or, you know, it just wasn't allowed. So we had to play on parks. And but the love of the game, it didn't matter. We'd have played on the moon.
Well, we played on slopes.
Yeah.
No. You know, that way.
Yeah. No mud.
What? Heaps, yeah.
You know. Puddles in the goal mouth. Horrendous sometimes, but yeah, you just loved it anyway. So you didn't have anything to compare to other than the love of the game. So
now, for example, if you compare it to the standards of professional women's football and their training facilities,
you know, imagine heaven
team now.
Absolute heaven. A flat really pitch. You know, inch grass, lovely astro to train on. Oh,
nobody coming glorious. On with a bucket and a wet sponge.
Yeah.
But every injury that you ever had.
Every injury was repaired with a bucket and a wet sponge.
Like ligament injuries.
Yeah. Broken limbs, anything.
Anything. I'll say, we didn't seem to have a lot of ligament or that type of injury because we never had AstroTurf.
True. Mm-hmm.
And we played on pitches that had, although they were poor, they had spring in them. And
I can't remember. A lot of anybody, give in them.
Yeah, a lot of mud heaps in them.
But I never remember many people having ligament injuries. Okay. Never.
It made me laugh today, really. Sorry butting in, but I can't remember who was commentating on the game today, the Everton Man City final. He was saying, he said, you know, the girls, you know, they're used to training on the AstroTurf and this, that, and the other, and you know, playing on Wembley. He said the ground is quite heavy going, you know, because we've had all this rain. It's quite heavy. I think. Blimey, it's like a billiard table out there. It is playing in about Wembley. Crikey.
Yeah.
If only you had something flat to play on, it'd been great.
Yeah.
I think it made us better players, though. All the adversity we were against to play.
Definitely.
Yeah. We didn't have high expectations, really, when it came to pitches.
Being a girl, a woman playing football is not without struggles, barriers, things that make it more difficult for us than it would be for boys, well, than it is for boys to play football. So in all of your time playing football, have you come across any sort of barriers or discrimination or things, you know, whether that be stigmas about playing football or whether it be more structural things like lack of teams? Chris?
Well, with people that were around us, they were very supportive. So I can't say, you know, that was bad. But we had poor facilities. And that goes down to the hierarchy, really, because football was banned. So women's football was banned. So we had to make do with what little we had. But the support we had from the managers, the referees that we managed to pay for to come and referee a game, they were very interested in it. So I can't really say I felt too bad about it. And I was so mad on the game anyway that I didn't care less about people that didn't care about, you know, women's football, because they tended to keep away and we just got on with it. So, yeah, I think we were mad on it, and so nobody would put us off.
I think when we were talking about, like, you getting into football at the start, you all said that the actual boys that you played with were really supportive of you being there. There was never any sort of, they didn't want you to be part of the team.
No. I never had that, ever. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'd get upset if I didn't turn up, you know.
No, all I was going to say is about one of the barriers I feel may have been when we were playing. We were playing on a Sunday afternoon, and it was away to Sunday afternoon because that was the only time we could get a pitch, because none of the boys or men would be playing at that time. So we got really what was left, basically. And my dad became a director of Aylesbury United, so we could use their facilities and their pitch. So it was hard to get inroads to find a pitch. I don't know, like at Luton with Leah and Chris, you know, it was park pitches, but it was always the last slot, basically. At training, we had to train late in the evening because all the other early slots were taken for the men.
Mm-hmm.
So we would start training at 9 o'clock at night for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I found, or, you know, later on, that's what I found, you know. Even that was in the late 80s, early 90s, that was still like that.
I think it like still is like that in terms of training and facilities, like the pitches, it's definitely still like that. I mean, even now that I'm playing football, just when I was playing last year in Spain, we always trained, it was like the same. We started at 9:45 for 2 hours, which is ridiculously late.
Yeah.
Because the boys, all the boys' teams had the 5 o'clock slots, the 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, even 8 o'clock slots. And we also had the worst days. So, you know, it would be the day after the match and the day before the match, for example, and during the week, because those days would be reserved for the boys' teams. And it's just kind of an unspoken rule. I think even at universities, like, the boys get the best pitches, they get the best training times.
Yeah.
Just have priority over everything.
So that really hasn't changed then in all that time.
No.
Amazing. I thought it would have progressed a bit then. Yeah.
It's a psychological put down, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm surprised that now that goes on.
Mm.
I mean, I do remember, I have to say this, if we were lucky enough to get a dressing room, it was filthy, absolutely filthy, because obviously we were the last people of the weekend to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite depressing, some of the dressing rooms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, facilities were generally poor. Mm-hmm. With regards to barriers, and Chris and Jill have said the same, you know, because we love playing the sport and we started to play so young, for us it was just natural to kick a ball. And the boys were great friends and it made no difference. Outside of football, growing up, of course, you were still aware that people would say, well, girls don't play football. So there was always that stigma of it's not a girl's game. And you had to be quite resilient, I think, to continue to play in those days, because people, you know, they'd sort of look, and some people would come and watch games or walk past. I think you've heard the phrase said, sort of, one man and his dog would come to the recreation ground where you may be playing and would realise it was a women's team playing. and expecting, you know, I don't know what they expected, but were surprised often at the level of football that was played. So in that way, you did, it made you resilient, because actually it was frowned upon, girls playing football. It wasn't made easy. And what's fantastic nowadays is that people realise it is just another sport. You know, it's, you played football, but you played netball, you played hockey, you swam, you ran, you played tennis. So you played all sorts of sports, and football just happened to be one that you played as well. And, but because it you were natural to playing it, you just loved it. And that's no different for a boy or a girl, especially at the age of 5, 6, 7 onwards. So that was sometimes difficult. I don't think it was, it was sort of frowned upon. Well, you know, girls don't play football.
I think maybe they wanted to keep it to themselves. I don't know, because hockey can be quite much more scary, you know, and you can get hurt more in hockey than football. So
I'm just thinking, maybe it is the male thing, you know. It's more liberal now, isn't it? You know, women have got a voice now, but back then it wasn't. Women, as we've heard from some of the players, like from Argentina, you should be in the kitchen, basically. Well, I'd be no good in a bloody kitchen anyway. No point me being in the kitchen. But, you know, that was their mentality, I think, back then, you know, in the, the 60s, 70s, when we were growing up, you know, even 80s.
It's like the patriarchy, isn't it? Because most people that like sport are not, you know, even today, men that I talk to, if they've got a passion for football and they know you have, they'll talk to you about it. They see, it's the people that you don't see that stop you doing it. You know, the invisible people that are there that somehow don't want women to succeed in it. And I don't know why. I don't. It's just a game.
Definitely true what you said about it's a man's sport. And like in this country, what I mean by that is it's owned by men, and it always has been. And it's a really important sport in itself, but football specifically is a really important like space for men to be masculine. And like women encroaching on their territory is, they don't like it. They don't want that. That's kind of their space to be themselves and to show off their macho-ness and masculinity, and us sort of being in those spaces. They don't want to give that up to us. It is things like that. The men have still have nearly all
at a high level, isn't it? It's at high level because it's not the normal sportsman and sportswoman, because they will get on. I mean, all right, some might be a little bit prejudiced, but in general, it's the people that are high up that you don't see, the hidden people that don't let you get on.
Like, it's just about equality of sport. It's quite amazing that people can't see sport for what sport is. I do feel quite strongly that women should play football as women and not play football trying to play like men. I think women should really work on skill levels and that type of football, and enjoy that, what you get out of being a good footballer, you know, the dribbling, the heading,
the skill.
It's about, to me, any sport is about your skill level, and women should just work on being women playing football. Not worry about whether you can't compare women's sport really with men's sport. Because whatever you're playing, it will be different. It'll be a different speed. There will be a different attitude to it.
Yeah, I think that's what some men feel, you know, you shouldn't be playing, you know, you'd never be as good as the men. But as Leah just said, we're not trying to be as good as the men. We're trying to be the best that we can, and within, you know, the sport that we play. So, it's never, physically you can't. Skill levels can be as good as, but we're not even trying to judge us against a man's team. It's women's football. It's women's rugby. It's women's cricket. It's a it's the same game, but it's for women.
You see, we've come a long way, and the skill's been great, and we're moving in the right direction. But we are 100 years behind the men, because they've had 100 years of everything.
Development, 100 years of development,
So, you know, it is going to take time. It is going to take time to have people putting on the TV and wanting to watch women's game, but it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if the women got a better slot, you know, or on a Sunday morning, they could have a programme about women's football for young little girls to see and have role models.
Mm-hmm.
We'd come a long way, you know, because, you know, most things are on really late at night. And, you know, when you're seven, that's when you want to see it. And, it's down to that, really. Because I remember when I was a kid, if I watched something on the TV, it was on early, you know, because I wouldn't be up late at night watching things.
Mm.
Yeah, so...
In the 70s, your role model or your favourite player was inevitably going to be male.
Yeah.
And my favourite player at that age was George Best. Just mesmerised me. Mm. Just loved watching him play football, his balance, his skills, his speed, his everything.
Yeah.
What's lovely now is that we're moving into an era where young girls, as Chris has just said, if it was on earlier in the day, they'd see girls, women playing football, and they will become their role models. And it'll take time, but I'm sure it will get there once everyone stays positive with it. But girls play as girls and women play as women, and don't worry about trying to look like, you know, men playing a sport, because it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. What sacrifices did you make, or if any sacrifices, in order to play football when you were younger? Jill, how about you?
Don't know about when I was younger. Starting out playing, don't think there was any sacrifices as such, but it was 1989. My parents were moving over to Menorca.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the girls remember this. And my daughter, she was 18 months old, and I was playing at Arsenal then. Mm-hmm. And they moved over end of January 1989. And my husband at the time and my daughter, we were all moving over there together. But I said, well, I can't go because I want to finish off the football season.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed on at Arsenal while they all moved over there. I stayed here for 3 months to finish off the football season with Arsenal. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was as important to me, obviously a bit more important to me, my football, because I wanted to finish that season off with Arsenal. And then I went over, but then I didn't settle in Menorca, and I came back and picked up the football again in the September.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that was quite a major thing. And, you know, my husband at the time was fine with it. You know, obviously didn't like it, but he knew, and my parents knew, that my football was that important to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was quite a major...
that was. I didn't realise, Jill.
I didn't realise
you'd done that.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. And my daughter, Courtney, she would have been 2 on February the 7th. Mm-hmm. So they went out at the end of January. So I missed her birthday, but I was just so wanting to finish the football season off. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm. No, that's a big thing.
How about you, Leah?
I can't think of any sacrifices. If there was, say, family gatherings and they happened to be on a Sunday and they clashed with football, then I would still play football and everybody accepted that and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you look back and you think, well, you know, should you really have done that? I don't know. But everybody was quite happy with it. So, no, I think we were very lucky that perhaps we were just very strong-willed because that's how you had to be if you wanted to play football. So it, like Jill's already said, you know, obviously meant a lot to you
mm-hmm.
to play.
Chris, what about you?
Well, I was going to say the same, and then I remembered the one thing. When we went to Sicily for the qualifying games before we went to Mexico, it was at the time when I should have taken O-level mock exams.
Mm-hmm.
And my school said, if I did go and I didn't do the mock exams, I couldn't do the O-levels.
Oh.
So I didn't.
Really?
I know, it sounds harsh now. I just did CSE, well, I think they were called GCSEs then.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went to Sicily. And then when my exams were due, I just did GCSEs and I took eight and passed them all. But I wasn't allowed to do the O-levels, so... There again, same thing. My school wasn't very flexible about it.
Not at all. Can you imagine that now?
No. And I was struggling to think of a sacrifice, but as Leah said, we were so determined.
Yeah.
That we wanted to play, but nothing got in our way. Thankfully, my mum and dad didn't say, well, you can't go.
Yeah, that's true.
Do it. But it was in a different era. I mean, when we were young, you were you left school and you were guaranteed a job.
Mm-hmm.
And things didn't go on your school as much as they do now.
Mm-hmm.
So so in that respect, you know.
Yeah, well, you kind of all have definitely made sacrifices to play, even though it doesn't really feel like it doesn't feel like a sacrifice because it's like what you chose to do kind of thing and you didn't
football.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't easy getting, like we talked earlier, it wasn't easy getting to games, so I would catch buses to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And walk a distance. Yeah. So we were extremely fit, actually.
Yeah.
Extremely fit.
Yeah.
You had to love the game to have played on some of those pitches.
Yeah.
You really did. Hackney Market
in the winter wasn't the place to be, really.
No, it really wasn't.
The sea coming across.
Your hands would be freezing. The changing rooms would be cold. You couldn't take your boots off because your hands were so cold.
Next week, we'll talk more about the World Cup and your experiences there and how it all happened and why it's still not recognised by the FA.
Oh, we'll have a field day. We'll need about three signings. We'll have that much material.
Strangely enough, it seems to be recognised in every other country but ours.
Oh.
It is history, if only they take notice that we were part of the history. Oh.